All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Well, good evening. This is American Vindicta. I am your host, Doug Thornton. Thank you for joining me this evening. We have been on a march, as it would be, for learning about preparatory items and survival skills. And what I find is a different kind of way to prepare. And the way that I tell people to prepare is, you have situation dictates. And I guess your situation will dictate how you want to prepare. I think that if you just prepare for the absolute worst and you get what you need, then the small things should already be covered. We obviously are facing a time when we are, being threatened by Russia with nuclear war, and we have a weak president who is probably going to bow down to Russia, even though he holds the pocket of Xi Jinping in China. We have an economy that's going to implode. We have a divide in this country politically and socially that will probably end up leading us to a civil war. We have rampant crime. I was just watching on InfoWars on Fox News a while ago. Fox News is a big old pretty Christmas tree was set on fire by a crazy homeless guy. So, gotta love New York. And also in New York, there was three men in a black car that did a drive-by on a person in a white SUV at a stoplight. It looks to me like this is probably mob-related, mafia-related, obviously gang-related of some sort. That's what you get when you live in these big democratic cities, ladies and gentlemen. That is where the criminals are. That's where the gangs are. That's where the mobs are. That's where the mafias are. That's where all your corrupt politicians and all their friends live. And they really don't live out in the country like where I'm at. You don't really live up in the mountains of Montana and Wyoming. There are a few scattered here and there, but for the most part, they love to all be near the urban jungle. Get out now while you have a chance. That is Wrecker's tip of the day. Get out of the urban jungle and don't settle for the suburbs. To all my Serbanite friends out there, all you Serbs, if you live in a gated community, when prophecy hits the fan, you are going to be faced with a couple of problems. I wasn't going to talk about this, but since I've had two cups of coffee now, let's go ahead and talk about it. What you're going to be faced with if you live in a gated community outside of a large urban community, you are going to have the influx. And we're talking about, worst case scenario, okay? We're not talking about every day. We're talking about if we wake up in the middle of the night and we turn into South Africa. What you are going to end up facing is you will have people coming from the city out to your suburbs scavenging. And they are going to be looting and they're going to be treasure hunting and robbing and ambushing people. Because whenever the urban jungle is burnt down and there's no more goods, and the crime lords tell their henchmen, hey, go out yonder and bring me back more goods, well, the only yonder outside the city limits is going to be the suburbs. So for all you who live in a gated community, you have a few advantages, but you also have some disadvantages. Let's talk about your advantages at least. So, what is the advantage that you have? I'm going to draw this out on my handy dandy tactical yellow notepad. So let's say you live in a big square, all right? You're probably going to have multiple different areas of ingress and egress with some sort of electric gate that is probably security coded to a personal security pin that the HOA, so there's a con, the HOA is going to give you. But pros are you're going to be in a fenced-in community. You're going to have gates, maybe, and a guard, even though 9 times out of 10, they're not going to be very well trained, nor are they going to be armed. Gate guard that I went and saw not too long ago, a couple months ago, visiting a friend of mine just south of us. I pulled up, and it's probably a 19, 20-year-old kid, and he said, "Can I help you?" I said, "Yeah, I'm here to see so-and-so." "Well, what address does he live at?" "He lives at this address, and he sent me this code." So I was like, "Wow, that's pretty cool." And he went and scanned a QR code that I got sent, and it verified. And as I was looking at the young man as he came up, he was all kinds of disheveled. His shoes were untied, okay? Just for starters, he had 2 different kinds of shoes on. His shoes were untied. Half his shirt was not tucked in, so, you know, there's no discipline there. Didn't care about his job. Didn't care about your shoes. Your shoes aren't tied. God forbid you need to run or you need to scuffle with somebody. Your shirt's not even tucked in, so I already know you're not well-disciplined. You're probably not former military or a cadet or law enforcement and doing this on the side. So that also means that you probably don't know situational awareness. So you probably also don't know how to challenge people properly. And you don't know a lot of the ins and outs of the realms of security like you probably should if you're working a job that says security. But at the end of the day, let's talk about this. If you have a fenced-in community and it's the end of the world, take advantage of the ingress and egress, the controlled inputs and outputs that you have for lanes of travel within your community. That's where you're going to put your armed guards at. You'll probably have your own little civilian watch or militia or whatever you want to make out of it. That's where you're going to put your armed guards, your 24/7 armed presence. I'm going to go ahead and write this down. Here's my X right here to the north. Here's my X right here to the south. I want armed guards north and south. So here's my north gate, my south gate. I want probably 2 guys on each gate. And this is for, you know, during the day and nothing really bad is happening. And then I want 1 form of relief that would be on the inner part. So that would end up plussing it up to 3 guys on the north and on the south. That extra guy will be to relieve one of the others if they have to go eat, if they have to run to their home and get something, if they have to use the restroom. You're always going to have 2 armed men sitting there. And then you probably also want a supervisor who can travel back and forth, or a supervisor for the north gate and a supervisor for the south gate. It really depends on how many able-bodied people that you have. But in a sense, if it gets worse, if things get really bad, you can plus up 2 gates very fast. Now, that means that if you have a west gate and a east gate as well as a north and south, you need to close 2 of those corridors so that you have a north-south or a east-west lane of travel, whatever is the most easy for you to secure your home, your homestead, which was what this would be. This community would end up being a homestead-like community at that point. You know, think of it like a really pretty fort, but with a really crappy fence, because most of your fences are probably just going to be wrought iron. So, you know, there's good things and bad things with that. Good thing is you can see out of it, but people can see in it. Bad thing is if people shoot at you, it can go right through it possibly, but your bullets can go right back. So, you know, would creating a rampart so that you can have guys standing up above the fence, who can shoot down as a different angles of fire, you know, All those things are up to you and what you want to do. I'm not really going to get into that because I don't know, you know, your community. If you pay a small fee, I might. But anyways, I don't know your community, how you want it getting, how you would want it to be set up. But I know that if it were me, I would want a very well beefed up exit portal, entry portal, and I would want to have a minimum of 5 guys on each one. Now, depending on how big your community is and depending on how many men are in that community or women who are willing to pick up a rifle or a pistol and guard their community, put them on and have plenty as reserves. Switch people off every other day or, you know, have a 12-hour shift where people are just cycling in and out and in and out. Now, I will say this, if when it comes down to, you know, probably putting people on shifts, if that's possible, if you never worked the night shift, if you have never worked from 8 to 8, it sucks. It all kinds of sucks. Your body is not used to staying up that late. You could probably hang with the boys for about 1, maybe 2, and then everyone gets tired, and then everyone gets quiet, and then people start falling asleep at 3, 2:30. 4 o'clock, people are struggling. 5 o'clock, people are dead asleep, but standing up with their eyes still open. 6 o'clock, you start to get a little bit back. 7 o'clock, hey man, we'll be relieved in an hour. Start to get a little bit more energy back, and by 8 o'clock, yeah, most of the time you're fine. But it takes a while to get used to that. Here's a really good example of how to stay awake at night if you're in a large group. Don't let the sidebar talking and the joking and the music and everything that distracts your brain to keep it thinking and going and enjoying your time, don't let that stop. Don't have the guy that makes everything so awkward that it breaks everyone up into smaller groups. Now, I'm not saying hold hands and sing kumbaya, but if you fall asleep on your post, and me, I'm an old Marine Corps guy, so you know, if you've ever had a private or PFC or Lance Corporal fall asleep on your post, and you haze that guy until, you know, he is watering the grass with his sweat, he will know. Do not fall asleep on post. Walk my post round and round, and I ain't getting in trouble. That's your number one task, to walk it round and round and round, to stay awake, keep your eyes open, be looking out for your supervisor as much as you are the bad guy. But, you know, the high elements of crime, the high elements of a nighttime raid or ambush are going to happen around the witching hour. That's that 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, maybe 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock. Why do I say that? Because most people are dead asleep, and those during this point in time, like let's say within the first week or two of the collapse happening and you having to start this community preparedness, most of you will not be used to this. There may be a few of you who are up here and there, but not enough to thwart what I would throw at you. Because I can sleep all day long, me and the gang, and say, hey, we're going to hit, you know, North Gate Village at 3 this morning. Maybe 3:30. We're going to send our recon team out, do some reconnoitering, collect a little bit of data. We're going to keep eyes on, move teams up, and we're going to plan a little bit of a distraction before we start our invasion on you, our raids. Because if you were to do it right, if you were a small group of people coming against a large group of a settlement, you don't want to have an all-out firefight because you're already outnumbered. And since we are talking about the, you know, post-dystopian America, bullets are hard to come by, and so is blood. So you want to make sure the bullets stay out of your body as much as your bullets go into another body. And you may not have the ability to, you know, have that 24-hour medical care, let alone go to the sporting goods shop and restock on ammo. So if you were smart about that, if you were smart about staging a raid on a, on, you know, a settlement, then you would want it to be very precise, to only last for so long, have, you know, a little bit of talking guns here and there, one shot about every 10 seconds, another shot, just enough to distract you and make people freak out and go crazy while you're also testing defenses and seeing, you know, just exactly what it is that they can bring to the table. Maybe if they have night vision, then you'll start learning that as they accurately put rounds on range. But while all that's happening, I will have some of my guys sneaking into the back or sneaking in through the sides and stealing food out of houses. Now, that seems like a lot of things to happen just to steal food. But if I know that there is a super Walmart sitting in front of me and that the security is not on par, well, I may raid a couple times before I go and gather a couple more friends and actually challenge you and attempt to take it. All right. Everything I just said. It's hard to think about stuff that way as a normal person. Thankfully, I'm not a normal person, and I do think that way. I thought that way for the federal government for the last 10 years when it came to my job and how I look at defending federal properties or federal buildings. I always think of, how would I destroy it? Now I know how I would try to thwart my own destruction. You know, it's playing chess against yourself, basically. So, you know, the adequate amount of protection that you would want on most places like this is a fence, a gate, a guard, good lighting. You want lighting that actually starts probably 100 to 200 feet before your gate, and then somewhere in between, another set of lights, and then lights that will shine behind your gate, not on your gate. You don't want to silhouette yourself. What you want to do is blind people as they're coming forward, right? So then you would tell the rest of the community at night, light discipline. Turn all the damn lights off. Don't have lights on. Walk around with flashlights or buy candles if you need to. But this is also where having a fence that you can't see through is going to be most helpful, because if I'm the bad guy and I can't see through the gate, then automatically in my mind I say, there's a man in every house with a gun who is probably on par with me at using it. Even if that's a fallacy, even if I know it probably is a fallacy, I will approach more cautiously, knowing that it's still a probability. So have your defenses set up well enough that you can deter the average bad guy or group of bad people. You know, you want to deter them, you want to defend your castle, more or less, and you want to deny entry. So when we talk about denying entry, we're also talking about the ability to repel an attack. So that means people need training. That also means you need to put people who are smart and who are made of good courage and good material on the security teams. Not just the average Joe. And, you know, no offense to, you know, a lot of people that are out there that, you know, they think they're Rambo made over. But I want people with actual experience and grit. I will take somebody who is brave and has grit over a veteran who is a coward, who has a drinking problem, and who is constantly, I don't know, belligerent. Because what I need is discipline. What I need is discipline and the willingness to just follow one simple order. And this is where it comes down to the task of supervision. You need people who are very well-minded at being supervisors, managers, but leaders more than so. You want people that will inspire someone to run into gunfire for you. That's what a leader is. But that leader better be either right behind my heels or right in front of me. We're talking about defending the castle. We're not talking about waiting to be attacked and then just dealing with it. You know, that's not what preparatory means. That's not what preparation means at all. And, you know, when we talk about the survivability, my God, you know, if, and this is the thing, as I harp on communities, very much so, because you need the blacksmith, the electrician, the engineer, the nurse, the school teacher, the chef, the farmer, the rancher. You need the guy who, you know, is the crazy dude who makes ammo in his garage while smoking a pipe. You need the guy who, you know, he's the retired fire marshal. You need the guy who's the plumber, the welder. You know, you need a community of people of all different shapes and sizes and colors and smiles and different attributes in order to make this work. We're essentially restarting a city now, right? You can always try and go out and do this on your own and let me know how that works for you. But humans will always, like dogs, form packs, and the most aggressive person of that pack will be the leader. And at that point, the leader of the pack has to stay on top of being the most aggressive person. So they're going to do the most wildest things. And when we're talking about a dystopian future, that means very brazen attacks on people and very, very horrific attacks. We're not going to really get into it because, you know, FCC rules, right? So just think about that. The depravity of man knows no depths. We're going to go to a quick break. We're going to continue to talk about preparation and what it means as a community and some of my tips and points and what I would do if I was to create, you know, the wrecker township, I guess you could say. We'll discuss that right after the break. Please stand by.
The time for political correctness is in the rearview mirror. The fact is, the American dollar is on the verge of collapse. It's been abused mightily by those in power. Massive debt, massive inflation have left Americans with few options. Most think they have no choice but to ride it out with their money in the bank. And sadly, they're going to awaken one day and all that money is going to be gone. Do you have an option? The answer is yes. Precious metals. But knowing to go into precious metals is not the same thing as knowing who to go into precious metals with. We have an answer for you. It's called Renaissance Precious Metals. It's owned and operated by the famed Steve Quayle, radio talk show host, world famous, and an expert in precious metals. Been doing the work for 34 years. So whether you're interested in gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, whatever your interest is, wherever you want to land in your escape pod, this is it. Renaissance Precious Metals can be reached at 406-586-4842. Call Steve Quayle at 406-586-4842. You can also visit them online at sqmetals.com. Ladies and gentlemen, don't wait. The collapse is underway. The time to act is now.
And we're back. This is American Vindicta. We are talking about community preparedness and all the fun drama that's going to come along with it. Just for starters, to all my Marines out there, Semper Fidelis, keep your heads on a swivel. Stay sober-minded, please. Our country is getting very bleak and dark, and I need all my brethren of war, to include even some of you Army dogs out there, to stay very sharp. And if you are an American patriot or a veteran of any other one of our communities or police officer, you know, so on and so forth, if you like carrying guns and defending this country, first off, thank you. I appreciate you. America appreciates you, even when they forget to say it. Stay sober-minded. If you have problems right now, I would tell you to start solving them. If you are not in shape, I would tell you to start running. You should have started running last year when Joe Biden won the presidency. We need to be prepared to teach people, the laymen, how to defend this country, how to defend our communities, how to defend themselves and their families. It's going to be up to us to do that. Now, you're going to have community leaders who are going to pull together and they're going to try and still run the community as if the community has never changed. And that's going to be a problem. Let's just take it in the book One Second After. The original people in charge of the city, or in charge of this little town, stayed in power for as long as they could until the first time they got attacked. And they got attacked by a large group of people. And after the attack, and everything fell apart, and some of their key leadership died, and some of their key infrastructure was damaged or destroyed, they quickly realized that a new level of, I don't know, I'd hate to say an authoritative rule by someone who is a veteran needed to be established. So I am a little bit against that. You should never give too much rule, too much power to one person, because power corrupts absolutely. So I believe in order to have a good community, you should have a board of people, just like within our own Congress or Senate, but not as corrupt, hopefully, who will discuss the needs of the community, who will have, you know, a security portion, a external security, which would be your, I guess you could say like a militia, military style, and an internal security, which would be your inner security, you know, people that are posted on infrastructure protection, and then also your roving security, which is still your law enforcement, who will still be in place, hopefully, right? Because even whenever all hell is broken loose, you still need to try and enforce some form of normality amongst the civilian populace. Other than that, people are just going to go back to the Stone Age and start killing each other left and right. So within this community, you need to keep the laws on the books as best you can. You know, doesn't mean we're going to be locking up the town drunk every time he shows up, or, you know, doesn't mean parking tickets are going to be issued, or, you know, that the newest cadet who just hit the force needs to try and, you know, write 100 tickets the first month. No, it just means that you need to be very sober-minded and very serious about everything that you're doing. So you need to have people that are divided from, let's just say, security. Okay? So from security, we're also going to have asset acquiring. So your asset acquiring will be the people who will be going out and exploring. They'll be going out basically doing a road recon team, and they're going to find new places that have some sort of goods that you can salvage, or maybe even the same people who are keeping open trade routes between other communities. And also, these would be the same people who would be recruiting and scouting people who are traversing by and need a new place to stay within your community if it's available and if that's what y'all have agreed to do as a community. So your asset acquiring group would be, you know, a very mixed group of people, but that's the adult group. And I'm going to say it like that. That's the adult group. Adults know what assets need to be gathered, and they know what people, based off of years of experience, are good and what people are lying to you. Who is trying to scheme you and who is actually telling you, hey, there's a large group of cannibals in the next city. I think they're heading this way, right? So you're also going to be taking in a lot of intelligence, and you need to be able to compute that intelligence and be able to repeat it down the line to the rest of the people within the community for that level of preparedness. So, you know, for this, I would say I would want a small security team with them. I would want people who are engineers. I would want people who are, you know, maybe nurses or EMTs, people who know what type of medicines to be gathering and where to look. I want people who, you know, maybe are carpenters and plumbers occasionally going out for their needs and goods because they know exactly what they need to help maintain the infrastructure, right? And then you need good, able-bodied people who, if need be, get ambushed, can fight back. Not a bunch of teenagers just because the teenagers are fast on their feet. You know, you need people who are willing to fight. So, you know, that's a very important group of people. And it needs to stay somewhat small. I would say probably a squad for the Marine Corps. That's between a 12, 13, or 14 man group or woman. I know I'll get in trouble eventually for constantly saying man. But, you know, I would keep it somewhat small. I mean, you may be going out on foot. You may be going out on bicycles. Maybe going out on horseback. Don't go out on your golf carts. You know, you may be on side-by-sides or four-wheelers. You may be in a small vehicle convoy. If you do a vehicle convoy, keep it a small vehicle convoy. I would tell you to have, if possible, all small light utility trucks. That's plenty of things that you can throw in the bed of the truck quickly. And if you're out scavenging and you happen to be ambushed, you can quickly jump in the back of a truck instead of trying to open the van or trying to lunge your way through the back seats of the car and everyone's trying to be packed in like sardines and someone always gets left out. A truck is a very, very useful tool during this post-apocalyptic America. So I would say like your Tacomas. That'd be my go-to. Take three Tacomas. Yeah. Put a couple of coolers in the back in case you happen to find a place that still has fresh fruit or some sort of food. I would tell you strongly that if you see wild game, take it down. If you got 22s and you see some turkeys out along the road, shoot them. Take what you can while it's there. You can always take that meat and then you can process it and then you can smoke that meat. And, you know, rub it with enough salt and sugar that it will preserve that meat. And there are plenty of books out there. This is another part of preparation. We'll skip the asset acquiring, all right? You guys get it. Have responsible people who aren't going out there just trying to find comic books and booze. We need food, medicine, clothing for the upkeep of children and people who are constantly losing weight. You know, new belts, new tennis shoes, new jackets, new hats, sunscreen, all this random stuff that you don't think about, but your bodies are still going to be growing for the children. And most of you adults, when you don't have Happy Meals every day and Starbucks, you're going to do this incredible thing that you never knew your body could do. And you're going to lose weight. You're going to start dropping a lot of weight. Because you're probably going to be moving on your feet a lot. You're going to be staying up a lot. You're going to be used within a community to garden, to build walls, to build a new gymnasium or house, or convert something that's a large gymnasium into, you know, now a warehouse or a sick bay for people, an ad hoc hospital. There's all different types of things that people will get tasked for. And when you do get tasked for it, don't get into your feelings about it and don't be Mr. Grumpy Gills about it. If it is for the good of the community for you to get up off of your couch and help rebuild the wall that protects your community, go help. Because if you don't do that and you're just a useless eater, people are going to start calling you a useless eater a lot and it's going to make you look really bad. And you know, after like the doomsday scenario thing, you know, being told that you're useless is probably not a good thing. So that's Wrecker's 101 advice here. But food processing. Let's keep moving on. I'm even writing this down. Can you believe this? I'm taking notes of my own notes. Food processing. So as a country boy who grew up processing game, I will tell you that it's not that hard to... It's not that hard to process deer, to process cows, to process hogs, or any type of foul. You know, it's annoying with foul because, you know, sometimes you have to constantly pluck feathers. But for the most part, if you know what you're doing, it's not that hard, and it's, you know, it's a little time consuming, but that's it. But with processing of large game, let's just use, because in America, well, at least in Texas, we have white-tailed deer. If I happen to down a white-tailed deer, a buck or a doe, I have all different types of uses for that animal. If I have dogs, like I do out here on my farm, then the organ meat will be smoked. It will be boiled or smoked, and I will probably grind that up in my hand-cranked grinding machine and grind that up into some sort of a hamburger meat-style food and use that for my dogs. That's very, very good, rich meat. Now, you can also eat the heart and the liver, which I would actually recommend. When it hits the fan, organ meat is highly nutritious. Just cook it, smother some barbecue sauce all over it, do whatever you got to do to make it tasty, but your body is going to crave and require nutrients that Pringles that you've saved for the last 3 months and you haven't told anybody are not going to help. You know, your stash of M&Ms are not the nutrients that I'm talking about. It's protein. It's a red meat protein. That is what your body will need when it hits the fan. You will need to be in Spartan-like shape. That means you need to be fit, and you need to lose a lot of excess weight because you're probably going to need to move quite a bit, and you're going to need quite a bit of energy. So while your body is, you know, tapping into its own resources through, you know, the subcutaneous fat that you have on you, because we all have it. Unless you're just Mr. Perfect, then, you know, Mr. Perfect can eat his Pringles. But for the rest of us, fast as long as you can throughout the day, because the longer you can fast, the more your body will actually expel poisons within your body, the more you'll use up the fat storage that you have in your body, and the longer the food that you have saved up for you and your family, and I would hope would be also the food processing center, let's just go ahead and call it the cafeteria, or the chow hall, whatever it is that your community is storing for food, it will help that last a little bit longer too. So adults, we should be practicing intermittent fasting. I have had two cups of coffee, if you cannot tell, and I can't talk right. Words are hard. Anyways, moving on. So in my cafeteria, I want to have, let's just say, a gigantic steel metal building-like structure, like a gymnasium, like the basketball area that you're not using, right? And that's where I would have it, where people would come in, they'd be able to get their food, they'd be able to sit down, and they'd be able to leave. The food that you have at your house for your family is for you and your family, not for us and the community. Because I believe when people start going into your home and taking your food because it's quote-unquote for the better part of the community, well, you're probably going to start getting shot at for that. So let's just go ahead and avoid all that and be smart as a community and pool in our resources for one area where people get fed, you know, once or twice a day, right? The rest of that should be on you unless you're that family that's hurting, okay? So, and all this is, you know, this is touch-and-go kind of stuff, right? This depends on what the community is like, how big is the community. You know, out where I live, it's probably a 40,000 people community. You're not going to have one cafeteria for that amount of people. No, more than likely, it'll be your area of operations. It will be within 1 mile of where you live is your community. You may have extend that to 2 miles, but if you can walk to the end of your community in about 15 minutes to, you know, let's say 15 to 20 minutes, that's your community. Do you really want to go further than that? Because the further you go away from your home base. So just consider that, because we're talking about community preparedness, not the gray man who's operating by himself and, you know, is out there doing all the cool Rambo stuff. We're talking about as a community. So within this establishment, I would want a decent food processing area. I'd want a big steel building of some type with a concrete floor. Hopefully the power can be ran to it with generators, and that's also where I would want to have plenty of fuel for that, because I want refrigerators being ran there. I want the ability to have a meat processing center there. So if I can creatively create a walk-in freezer through insulation paneling and basically creating, you know, let's say a 800 square foot room, throw a window unit AC on that and make the rest of it completely enclosed. And it's also inside of a steel building, by the way. Now you have a walk-in freezer. So you tell the hunters of the community or the scouts, go out and get, let's say, 5 deer today. So 5 deer within my area, after you've processed all the meat, you might get about 60 pounds of meat off that deer, depending on the age of the deer and depending on the time of the year for the deer, right? Now, you people that are blessed to be up north, you got some huge deer. Holy crap. The mule deer, the elk, the moose. In Texas, where I'm at, we have basket rack trash whitetail deer that is a little bit bigger than a Labrador sometimes. So, you know, we're kind of sucking on that. But we got a lot of them. So I would want to have those animals processed. Keep the bones. You can cut those bones in half. You can boil those bones down, and then you can keep the marrow, and you can also make beef stock with that. So that can be used for the day's soup later, right? So there's a bunch of protein and a bunch of nutrients that comes out of that marrow and all that good bone broth. And then the excess of those bones, you can use that for whatever you want. You can do it wind chimes, or, you know, make flutes out of them, or feed them to your dogs, give them to the local kids. I don't care what you want to do with them. Bones are always useful. The Native Americans used every single piece of that animal. We need to start thinking like that when it hits the fan. Don't be wasteful. Now, from there, after I processed the animal, after I broke everything down, you might even want to learn how to brain tan and skin the hide out to where you can reuse the hide, make a new type of leather out of it. You know, you never know. You may need to make you some chaps out of it or something, right? But there are people out there who are weird like that. Anyways, after I processed the animal, after I divided the organs, I've divided the bones up, after I have then, got all the cutlets of the meat that I need, I'm probably just going to do it like this. I'm probably going to take one or two of those animals and I'm going to put it inside the cooler, and I'm going to use salt and sugar, and I'm going to generously smother this meat so that it helps to preserve it. And the longer it can preserve it, the longer we can have meat. That is a key element to keeping a civilian populace happy, is feeding them. Not dandelion soup whenever you've ate all the Chef Boyardee. It's good red meat. So, the other part of the meat, what I would honestly tell you to do, is to just take the meat, take it all off the bone, and just cube it up to small 1-inch by 1-inch cubes of meat. That's going to take all day long to do. But then you take a big nice pot, and there's always that one guy like me who's a Cajun who has that one big nice pot to cook food in, and you have your bone broth that you have, you pour it in there with a generous amount of water, your salt, your pepper, your cayenne, your whatever spices, your green onions, your potatoes, your onions that you chopped up, that you are all hopefully growing, by the way. maybe a couple jalapenos here and there, and then you throw all that meat in there and you let it cook for a couple hours over the fire, and now you have food for everybody. Hopefully somebody's grandmama's out there making some cornbread and passing it out so you can all have a good old country boy meal. In a perfect world, that's how I would do it. I'm here to tell you that we don't live in a perfect world. We don't have a perfect community. People will not get along with each other. And then people will start saying, well, you're eating more than we are. Or we're all eating the same, but we all lose weight except for you. So you must have plenty of food. So, you know, do you really need this food? Maybe I should have your ration. It's going to get complicated. I'm going to drink a little bit of my coffee real quick. 8:34 p.m. and I'm drinking coffee. It's going to get complicated. It's going to get ugly. People are going to get pissed off at you. People are going to say, you're hoarding food and you're hoarding this and you're hoarding that and poor me and woe is us and give us what you have. That's why you need police still. That's why you need strong men and women in the community making good, sound decisions while they're out scouting and bringing back plenty of, I don't know what you want to call it, assets, so that you can resupply your community. Because a big, large community is going to consume quite a bit of food very quickly. You know, you also have the, let's move on from there. You can all take food processing center, the cafeteria, the chow hall. You can expound upon that. Medical center. All right, now here's a grave one. Ha ha. So the medical center is also going to be in charge of the nursing home, the hospital, and grave digging duties. Sorry, guys. Grave digging duties. My suggestion. Use the softest soil that you have, which if you live in a big suburb or you live in one of these big gated communities, it's more than likely your golf course. Sorry, gents, your the 18th hole is going to be used for today's new cemetery. It is going to take quite a bit of calories and quite a bit of effort to dig graves. So I would suggest that the younglings be tasked with digging graves if you don't have the ability to use a backhoe. And if you do have a tractor available, hey man, go ahead and use it, right? Use it while you have it. But be smart about your diesel and your gas. So if you have to dig graves, you know, it's going to take quite a while. Let the younger guys do it. They have the more abled muscles and backs, but it needs to be 6 feet deep. The reasons for that, obviously, is we don't want the body to improperly be decomposing, because we're probably not going to be able to embalm the body. We're probably not going to be able to preserve the body. The body is going to have all of its internal messy stuff in it whenever it starts to decompose. That's going to get into the water source. Animals will be able to dig it up if it's not deep enough. Think about that when you have the roving pack of dogs that no one's taking care of anymore because no one keeps enough dog food on hand. You don't want the bodies to be dug up. You don't want little Timmy being dug up out of the grave and to find him all over the place. Okay, that's just not a good day. Especially if you live in an area with bears. We all know what kind of a nuisance a bear can be. So think twice about that one. And sorry for my graveyard humor. Marine Corps did a real number on me. But, you know, with the medical professionals, I am not a doctor, though I had a pretty good amount of medical training. I would say that you guys know what you need. You know the amount of plasma that you need. You know the amount of blood donations that you would need to keep up with and the refrigerants that you need to keep up with. You know how much... how much insulin the diabetics need. You know how long they're going to last when the insulin's not there. And you need to make families aware of that. And the doctors are going to be faced with a series of die-offs. You're going to have people who are going to die from infectious diseases, people who are going to die from overdoses, people who are going to die from a lack of medical need. You know, like the machines that keep the body going that aren't working anymore when the power is not there anymore for it. Or when the machines break down, there's not a new one to replace it. You're going to have die-offs for whenever people start to starve. And then, you know, the water gets contaminated or the, you know, salmonella spreads and the food gets contaminated and people die off from that. You're going to have a series of die-offs. Grave digging is probably going to end up being the people who get triple rations. Now, I don't mean to say that to sound bad. I'm just telling you, reality's sake, Americans don't know how to take care of themselves when it hits the fan and you don't have all these lovely things in place. You just don't. It's not necessarily a fault of yours. We were just raised in such a great country and economy that we could afford to divide everything out, and we had a great, reliable system. And when that system is not there anymore, and there's not an ambulance to come get you, there's not police to come save you in the middle of the night, there's not a military to, you know, stop an invasion, there's not school teachers to teach your children, there's not food anymore, because there's no more grocery stores, society will break down. People will take care of themselves one way or the other. But if you are a tight-knit community who meets, you know, at least once a month, you better be talking about this. And there are all types of elements of survival and places out there to get really good information. We're about to go to a break, and we will wrap this up right after.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, "You will own nothing and you will love it." And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today, where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have, access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position, really for the first time in our history. We're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it, Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
And we're back. So we don't have very much time left. We were at the top of the hour, but I'm going to hit these last four things very fast. Once again, medical. You medical professionals, you know what you need. Start having your list now and start going to your city right now and asking your city council, what is it that they have preparation-wise and what is it that they're lacking? And start tapping them now and saying, hey, if everything hits the fan, we need to be prepared for X, Y, and Z. Why don't you have this? How do we get it? Moving on. Infrastructure. That's my engineers. All my plumber bubbas. All my power line guys. All the county workers. You need to maintain the roads. You need to maintain the sewers. You need to maintain the power lines as best you can. Any form of hydroelectrical power output that we may have. and especially our water treatment facility while it's still going on. God, help us that we still have power. You have probably one of the most important jobs out there. You need the adequate amount of security to go out with you everywhere. And everywhere that there is a job going on, there should be a minimal of 2 armed security staff members with them. We can't lose these people. They're the ones who make the power stay on. We need them. Next, farming. I'm going to divide this. Farming and gardening. My farmers, I want you to focus on poultry. I want you to focus on small animals such as rabbits, your goats, your sheep, even up to large livestock if you have it. And gardeners, you need to focus on what? Vegetables. Vegetables and fruit, or whatever else it is that you can make from that. There are, you know, all different types of ways to feed people through sprouts or, you know, through different types of greenery. But you need an adequate amount of protein in there. You vegans are not going to last very long when it hits the fan. Sorry, guys. But what do they both have in common? Composting. The compost materials will come from rotten food and from the fecal matter of animals. Mulch all that together best you can, and then there's your compost for your next gardens. Also take the excess that you are growing that is rotting and feed your farm animals with it. Now you have a circulatory system and you're taking care of everything. This is American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. Thank you for joining us. And we'll see you tomorrow. This is American Vindicta. Out.
All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.